started.
Okay, turn on and off, what's the story?
Well, we should.
I've got everything.
The mute button, yeah.
And I'm supposed to do the timer, so.
When you want to talk, push your red mute button, and then your timer will be on, okay?
Shut off?
Yep.
That's how it is.
If the red light is on, it's muted.
Right.
Right, so when we want to talk, we push the mute button, and then we should talk.
Yes.
Okay, we're ready to go then.
Okay.
Good evening. This is the May meeting of the Health Commission for San Luis Obispo County. Meeting is now called to order, and the first order of business is approval of the minutes of the April meeting. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Okay, there being no additions or corrections, the minutes stand as distributed and published. Okay, next order of business, public comment. Anyone who wishes to make a comment on any item that is not on the agenda is welcome to come forward and make a comment for 3 minutes. Please come forward, state your name for the record. Thank you.
Is this on?
This is.
There's nothing there.
You're on.
My name is Elizabeth Johnson, San Luis Obispo. And I was at a meeting earlier this month or last month that your GMO task force report was being used as an educational material for the community. And I would just like to ask this board that since you voted to send all 3 reports to the Board of Supervisors, that you link them as well from your website, and so that any of the public who would like to see what differing opinions were can also access that information easily. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Next, please.
Yes, I'm Eric Greening, and I have a request for a future agenda, preferably next month's. Since we are entering toward the summer season when more and more people head to the ocean and expect to get in it, I think it's time for an agenda item that goes beyond status report and is a potential action item, at least of advice to the County Board of Supervisors, relative to the current status of ocean water quality and its impacts on the health of those who have contact with it. Particular emphasis needs to be given to Pismo Beach, where there seems to be some kind of a chronic problem. And I think in terms of action, doing whatever is possible to advise the board to put whatever resources are needed into determining the source. I know they're testing the ocean water. What kind of testing is being done upstream inland to find the source of ongoing problems that seem to be occurring? So anyway, I'm just hoping this does get attention, and when it comes time for you to discuss future agenda items, I hope that you'll agree with me that it's important to put something on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. We're always happy to have your suggestions. They've resulted in several of our programs, and thank you very much. Is there any other public comment to be made? Okay. That being the case, we'll move on to the next agenda item, which is bicycling. This is National Bicycle Month, and so we have Adam Fukushima from the County Bicycle Coalition and Jessica Berry, from the Bicycle Programs Coordinator from Rideshare, here with us tonight to make a presentation. Thank you for being here. You can go to either or both if you like. Do you have a PowerPoint?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
City would be nice.
Fine. That's great. Your choice.
Is this on?
Yes.
It is on? Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to thank you for inviting us here to talk about bicycling this month. I'm Adam Fukushima, Executive Director of the Bike Coalition, and this is Jessica Berry, the Bicycle Coordinator of the of SLO Regional Rideshare. What I'll do is I'll start off talking about the benefits of bicycling as far as health is concerned, and then I'll move to infrastructure and talk about some policies, and then about a little bit about the Bike Coalition and some of our programs. And then I'll hand it over to Jessica to talk about Safe Routes to School and some of the great stuff that Rideshare is doing. Okay. SLO County is a great place to bicycle. We have great weather, as you all know. We have relatively low traffic as compared to other communities and counties throughout the state. We have an active outdoor culture, a lot of hiking, a lot of ocean activities, other things that we do all year long. We have a above average bicycle use as opposed to the rest of the country. We don't have really good data on how much the bicycle is being used, but I can always point to SLO City's bicycle count. They have 3.5% commuter use as opposed to just 1%, which is the national average. We have many, many more people who are bike riding for just recreation rather than just for transportation. We also have a lot of events. We have the Tour of California and other events. The thing with the Tour of California is that the Chamber of California, the SLO Chamber, when they looked into getting the Tour of California, and they looked into what was some of the things that people watched on television, and they found that next to the Super Bowl, that people watch the Tour de France. It's the second highest thing in the county. So that's something that's good to know, that people are interested in bicycling, and it's just about getting them to use a bicycle for commuting and also more recreational uses. Bicycling is a healthy activity. It's a low-impact activity, and it's easy on the joints. When people get hurt or have an injury, a lot of times doctors say you should try bicycling as a way to get back on your feet and back into shape. It helps fight obesity and overweight issues. It's a great way of fighting diabetes. Since you're getting physical activity, it's a great way to increase your mental health. And since you're out riding your bike and not in your car, you're increasing air quality. And then lastly, bicycling is great for all types of body types. You don't have to be Lance Armstrong and go out there and get on a bike and enjoy yourself. You can go out on a leisurely stroll out on the Bob Jones Trail or out on the rural county areas where there are few cars. You don't have to be one of those aggressive Hispanic generation types to get out there and enjoy a bike. One thing I like about bicycling is it's a great multitasking activity. When you're out there bicycling and going to work or going to the store, you're getting exercise. And a lot of people, when they get into bicycling, they find out that, wow, I really don't need my gym membership anymore. I'm getting thinner, and I'm just doing it by doing the stuff I would do anyway, which is just doing your errands and going to work and getting around. Bicycling helps reduce employer healthcare costs. It's great for seniors because it's low impact and it helps them get more exercise, and it reduces strain on traditional health services. It helps connect people with the neighborhood. We put out a historical bike map, and when people started using that to go around areas in the city of San Luis Obispo, they always were commenting to us that, wow, when I go around on a bike, I really see a lot more of my community than I had before. I didn't know that there was a certain house just around the block that was an historic house, and I'd never seen that before, even though I've lived here 20 years or more, and it's really interesting to see people comment on those kind of things. Bicycling is great for getting more people out on the road, more eyes on the street. People seem to see more, see what's going on. A lot of times in communities that have high bicycling rates and people who are walking around their communities, they can see what's going on. And a lot of people point to it as a way to fight crime. Bike facilities make bicycling safer and encourage people to bike. One study that we found was by the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, and they found that bicycle infrastructure is really important when you're looking at getting people to ride a bike. They did a study and asked people, what kind of bicycle rider are you? And they came up with this chart here. And 1% are the fearless. And what they mean by that is they'll ride their bike anywhere. They're the Lance Armstrong types. They'll go anywhere, don't need a bike lane, can go in traffic, can go anywhere. 7% are what they call confident bike riders. Those are people who can ride with traffic, but they prefer some kind of bike facility, either a bike lane or other type of thing. And what's interesting here is that 32% said that they're interested in bicycling if there were more off-street facilities or facilities where there's less traffic. So that's really encouraging. It tells us that a lot of people want to do it if we had better infrastructure for it and they felt safer about it. What I put here was a nun riding a bike. I went to grad school in Holland, and I realized that you have a bike from the community when you have more women riding, more children riding, more seniors riding. Those are the type of infrastructure things that make people feel safe riding out there in it. And it shows. In the city I lived in, you had 60% mode share was by bicycle. And it's because they had a lot of bike lanes, bike paths, and other things that make people feel safe. This is a study done by John Pucher. He's a professor of planning at Rutgers University. He compared American bicycle injury rates to those in Germany and the Netherlands. And you can see that the USA is really far, behind as far as injury rates go. And you can see that if you have facilities in there, like Germany and Netherlands do, they're really a lot of good facilities that bicycle injury rates actually go down. The more people you have bicycling, studies show that the safer it is. Bike facilities in the city of San Luis Obispo, there is a railroad safety trail and other bike paths like the Bob Jones Trail, bike lanes. We'd like to see more of them, of course, and get them finished. I can't wait till the Bob Jones Trail is finished from Avila to the city of San Luis Obispo. Bike boulevards. This is a new thing in the city of San Luis Obispo. It's just on Morrow Street, connects downtown to the railroad area. What it is a parallel street to a major arterial, and it's a way for people to get downtown without having to go on a busy street. It's a neighborhood street. It's relatively low traffic, low speeds, and people feel safer when they can ride down those type of facilities. And you see there's a big bike stencil on the pavement there showing bicyclists as well as motorists that bikes belong here. Policies. The city of San Luis Obispo has a bike plan as well as the Rio Grande. There's also a county bike plan, and there's a county parks and rec element. And I'd like to thank the Health Commission for their support for the County Parks and Rec element that came out, I think it was in December. And there's also a county grand jury report that came out on bicycling recommending more funding for enforcement as well as for education of bicycling and bicycling safety. Incomplete streets. How many streets have you seen that look like this in the county? Where they're built mainly for motor vehicles. There's a national movement now to do what they call complete the streets, and that's to enact policies that make streets or redesign streets if there's a repavement going through, that all road users need to be taken into account, not only motorists, but also bicyclists, pedestrians, people with disabilities, people using transit, as well as freight. So we're moving forward in that regard. There are a couple of policies in San Luis Obispo. The city has something that's sort of a complete streets policy, and that's in their proposed bike plan, which goes before council tomorrow night, something that says, one policy that says bicycling is a viable form of transportation. And that's, I think that's significant. What does a complete street look like? Looks kind of like that. where pedestrians and bicycles are accommodated. It can also look like this one, where you have a bike path. This is Madison, Wisconsin, a great bike path and very wide sidewalks to encourage bicycling. Other policies are Caltrans has Deputy Directive 64, which is routine accommodation. And it's kind of like a complete streets policy. An example of that would be the new paving of Highway 227 by the airport. There's a new bike lane. It's really a lot wider than it used to be. And that's a direct effect of Deputy Directive 64. There's a Complete Streets Act in Sacramento right now. AB 1358 would require cities and counties in their general plan to have complete streets policies. And complete streets are supported by AARP, the American Council of the Blind, and the American Planning Association. So we've made a lot of partners with different organizations and different stakeholders. Another big bill before Sacramento is AB 437, and that's obesity and land use. The idea behind this one is that housing policies are health policies. Where people live, where people work, where people play are all related, and how they get there and how we can increase physical activity between these areas. Right now, county health officers don't have any statutory authority to engage in land use and transportation planning, and this bill would help help ease that. The Bike Coalition is a 501c3 nonprofit, and we've been around since about 2001. And we do we make SLO County better for bikes. That's our mantra, and we do that through advocacy programs and education. As far as advocacy goes, we support the county Parks and Rec element. We support complete streets policies. We've worked on road diets, which is reducing road lanes and increasing bike lanes and sidewalks. One example of that is South Street in the city of San Luis Obispo. We're involved with that. Increasing bikeways. We've been a proponent of the Railroad Safety Trail in the city as a connection between Cal Poly and downtown, as well as the Bob Jones Trail and education programs. Bike First, this is one of the programs I really like. This is through a grant through the Air Pollution Control District, and what it aims to do is a lot of people want to try bike commuting, but they don't want to spend a lot of money on a new bike when they don't know if they'll like it or not. So this program provides a subsidy, and they get a $1,000 bike for only $250. And what we do is we send out a questionnaire or an application to people, and if they have never tried bike commuting before and promise to do so and try it, and we have we have a computer on their bike that logs their miles. We can find out how long they've been doing it. And if they keep up with it, they get to keep the bike. Certainly.
Yes, I noticed that not one single person here is wearing a helmet. What do you do about helmets?
They have been given helmets. They just haven't put them on yet. So I think they're in their little, they have a little pack there with helmets in there. So we give them helmets as well.
Is there a law that says bicyclists must wear a helmet? I know there is for children.
There is for children, but not for adults.
For adults. That's a biggie. Yeah.
And bike education clinics. We provide a bike education clinic every other month, and that's to help promote safe and legal bike riding. One of the biggest problems we deal with is we see people riding the wrong way on bike lanes or the wrong way in traffic or not stopping at stop signs. This is our way of trying to help mitigate that. People learn how to ride safely, legally, also more confidently. A lot of times you have a road where you just feel really intimidated about riding a bike, and this gives you some tools about how do I do that? How do I act like a vehicle in my bike and take the roadway. We also offer bike commuting tips, how to carry stuff, how to go shopping with a bike, and our instructors are certified by the League of American Bicyclists. And that's all I have. I'll turn it over to Jessica.
If you don't mind, I'd like to stand, so I'm going to go over here. Thanks, Adam. As Adam said, my name is Jessica Berry, and I'm the Bicycle Programs Coordinator at SLO Regional Rideshare. And Adam and I partner a lot on many of the programs that happen locally. So SLO Regional Rideshare is a division of the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, which is our regional transportation planning agency that covers San Luis Obispo County. We promote all kinds of transportation choices in rideshare. That's walking, carpooling, vanpooling. We promote taking the bus for using transit to get to and from work. Also telecommuting, working from home, and of course bicycling, which is what I do at rideshare. So I listed there some of the programs that I work on at rideshare. Bike Month and Safe Routes to Schools are the two I'm going to talk about this evening. But we also produced the most recent county bike map, which came out last May. And we have copies of those available for people. We also promote employer bike programs as part of our employee transportation choices program. And we have bike lockers at park and ride lots throughout the county so that people can ride their bikes to catch the bus instead of having to drive to the park and ride lots or also to take the carpool. So I think Adam referred to how many people, the mode split for bicycling in San Luis Obispo in the city of SLO. For the county, I believe the number is 1.4% ride bikes to and from work in the county. So it's lower than the SLO city average, but that's to be expected. We actually have a very high carpool mode split. A lot of people carpool in our county, which we think is great also. So just to talk a little bit about Bike Month, it's May, and Bike Month is upon us. We have about 24 activities on our calendar this month, and we're just totally surprised and delighted to see how many things are happening. One of the first events that kicked off the month was this. It's the Bike Shift. It's a bike art display, and that's at the Copeland, at the Pier 1 building there on Monterey Street. And if you haven't seen it, I recommend going down and checking it out because it's pretty amazing. There's a lot of different kinds of bikes that have been built, and it's just a really fun show about bicycling. So go check that out. It'll be there until May 18th. That was a new event this year. We haven't done that before, but it's been very popular, and I'm sure we'll bring it back next year. Another event that we're doing now is the Executive and Commuter Bike Challenge. And this year, this is a month-long challenge. One of the things that we had thought about after all of the events that we put on last year is that we really wanted to do activities that promoted bicycling by getting people on their bikes during the month and riding as much as possible. So last year we launched a week-long bike challenge where we had, 141 members on 18 teams participated during the week, and basically they just rode their bike as often as possible to replace car trips. And those trips and miles they logged into the website, and then at the end of the month, or at the end of the week, rather, the teams that had the most trips per person and the most miles per person won prizes. This year, we extended it to an entire month because we wanted to provide the environment to get people out and riding as often as possible. And ideally, if they ride all month, they'll see how great it is as a commute option and just ride all the time. And so far, we have 358 people participating on 47 teams. So that's nearly triple what we had last year participating for just a week. So it's really exciting to see how many people are participating. Last year, with the 141 members during 1 week, they rode 5,808 miles in 1 week, those 141 people. And these are all trips that could ordinarily happen in a car, but these are all trips that people have chosen to take on their bike. So we're looking forward to seeing how many miles of driving people decided not to do this month. Another program that we did this year is we had a mini grant program. We hadn't done this in the past, but what we wanted to do was highlight events that were already happening or provide opportunities for people to plan smaller events. So we had set aside a certain amount of money, and we gave away 7 mini grants. And these were given away on a first-come, first-served basis. But we were really pleased to discover that 4 of those events that we gave the mini grants for were for kids and families, and that 3 of those events actually were happening at schools. Each of these schools listed, Laguna Middle School, Paso Robles High School, and Santa Margarita Elementary School, are having walk or bike to school day events this week, and they're providing incentives by having, I think Santa Margarita is having a breakfast, Paso Robles is having a lunch, and Laguna Middle School is giving away prizes for kids that ride. In addition to those three schools that received mini grants, there are other schools that are doing activities this month. Los Osos Middle School is having an activity each day of the week around different types of bicycling, and that's through their PE program. Harlow Elementary School in Arroyo Grande is having a walk and bike to school day on the 30th of May. San Gabriel Elementary School is having a walk and bike to school day on Friday of this week. And Hawthorne Elementary School is having ongoing walk to school Fridays from now until the end of the school year. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about what they're doing further on. They also had an assembly and had a bike ed for parents class, similar to the bike safety classes that Adam talked about earlier. Those are that are taught by league certified instructors. They are also teaching this bike ed class for parents to help parents know how to teach their kids how to ride bikes and how to do that safely and what to tell them and what it's actually like for a child to be riding a bike. And then they're also having in their after school, not in the slow after school program, but a supplemental after school activity that some parents could sign up for is a bike ed class for children. And that's happening this month. The last three schools that I mentioned, Hawthorne, San Gabriel, and Harlow Elementary School, are all schools that came last year to a workshop that Slow Regional Rideshare and the San Luis Obispo County Bicycle Coalition partnered to bring for a Safe Routes to Schools program, which I'm going to talk about now. Safe Routes to School is a national movement. There's federal and state money available to promote walking and bicycling as actual forms of transportation that children and parents can use to get kids to school. As a history, kind of a history of the Safe Routes to Schools program here in SLO, is that the bicycle education or education in schools with kids for bike safety has always been a role that the bike coordinator position did at Rideshare. Before I was here, the bike coordinator put on assemblies at elementary schools and stuff. But it wasn't until the Bike Coalition actually wrote a grant to bring Wendy Callens, who's the director of the Safe Routes to Schools program in Marin County, the Coalition wrote a grant to bring her down here to have some trainings locally. And that the first training we did was last October, and we had about 50 people come to the two trainings that she did. She did one hour-long informational session about Safe Routes to Schools, and then she did a four-hour workshop the following day. And during that four-hour workshop, there were representatives from Harlow Elementary School, San Gabriel Elementary School, and Hawthorne Elementary School. And toward the end of that workshop, we were able to get into groups. We formed four groups, three of which were centered around those schools, to discuss specifically how to start activities at those schools to promote bicycling and walking. So this is what has developed out of that since that time. The Safe Routes to Schools program addresses each of these things: traffic congestion, air pollution, safety concerns, and the physical inactivity. Allowing children and parents to walk, providing the infrastructure for children and parents to walk and bike to school, can ease traffic congestion both around schools and just on our roadways in the morning. About 25% of traffic, of that morning traffic, is parents driving their kids to school. So having this other option available can decrease the traffic congestion, and it also provides parents with other options. A lot of the time when we're working on getting adults to ride their bikes to work, they won't be able to if they have to drive their kids to school to begin with. So providing an option for them and ways to get their kids to school without having to drive is something that the Safe Routes to Schools program tries to do. Also, air pollution in this county, 20% of air pollution is caused by cars. So we like the idea of decreasing the cars on the road to increase the quality of air in our county. Safety concerns around schools. Adam mentioned the eyes on the street concept. The more parents and children you have out walking, the safer it's going to be for them to do that. both in terms of visibility for cars, for people driving, and then also just the safety concerns that parents have about letting their children walk to school alone are very real, and we want to address that concern, and the ability to get more parents and families and kids walking will create more safety. And then, of course, the physical inactivity. It's, as Adam said, it's a great activity. It's seamless. It can replace having to take time out of your day to go to the gym. It's something that you can use to get where you need to go and then also use as your exercise. So we think it's a great plan there. The components of the Safe Routes to Schools program are engineering, education, encouragement, enforcement, and evaluation. They call it the five E's. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that by giving examples locally of what's happening. So engineering, San Gabriel Elementary School, it's also called infrastructure. San Gabriel Elementary School in Atascadero, they had their walk to school day, but part of what they were interested in doing was applying for an infrastructure, a Safe Routes to Schools infrastructure grant, because they want to use, they want to build a multi-use path, a separated path from the road there in front of the school to increase, so that more kids could walk or bike and not have to be in that roadway. There aren't sidewalks on either side of that street, except up by the school, but on the way up to that, to school, to the school there, it's just a road that would be, it's the type of road that parents do not want to let their kids walk on, so they want to create options for parents there. And engineering is also like those cones. There's other things that you can get, little sort of stopgap measures. There's no crosswalk there, and they've worked something out for that day. You can also get like paddles, those neon paddles to stick in the roadway to slow down traffic or to at least raise drivers' awareness. So engineering are those little pieces that you put out in the roadway, sidewalks, bike lanes, signs, those things that make it safer. Education, there's a few different components of the education. For instance, at Hawthorne Elementary School, they had the Bike Ed for Parents. That helps parents feel more safe about letting their kids ride. And then also, I've partnered with members of the Bike Coalition, Cal Poly Wheelman, other league cycling instructors to provide just information for kids about bikes and safety and helmet fitting. We do that. We spend a lot of time on how to put the helmet on right and how to wear it safely, because most kids, when they are wearing it, are letting this dangle down here. They're not clipping it. And those are the things that we try to teach them, that this is how you need to do it in order to, you know, to be really secure and safe. So that's an education component. And then enforcement, the police department provides a bike rodeo every fall. They also provide, around the time of when schools start up, they provide increased surveillance around schools to remind parents that they need to slow down when they're bringing their kids to school. Arroyo Grande Police Department also provided training at Harlow Elementary School. And when I get to evaluation, I'll talk about how important it is to have the police involved. Encouragement, this is an example of what's happening at Hawthorne Elementary School with their Walk to School Fridays. All the kids that walk get that little jewel, and then they put it on the door of the classroom. And there's different ways to do it. There can be, you can encourage kids by giving them individual prizes, or you can encourage the group mentality by, you know, rewarding the class that has the most participants. There's different ways to do it, and this is just one way. This is what's happening locally. And then evaluation, this is an example of a survey. We have a survey that we adapted from Portland Safe Routes to Schools program, and we tried it out. We did our first survey at Harlow Elementary School, and it had a bunch of questions on it. We got 100 responses, which is actually pretty good for a school of 700. We were pleased with the results. And as you can see here, I'm going to show you a few slides from the questions we asked. And this was what the benefits were of walking and biking that parents saw for their children. And the highest one there is the improved physical condition. What surprised me the most is that no one said it improved their kids' grades. But I would think that if teachers were asked what the benefits were, that might show up a little bit more. Although the better concentration is something that we hear a lot from parents who've started bringing their kids to school by walking or biking, is that the teachers will tell them, you know, they're more alert, they pay more attention, they interact more. And then other there, which has a pretty high response, the other was consistently that their child gained independence and were responsible. They were these were like really glowing, cheery remarks about why they loved letting their kids walk to school, which was great. This is why parents don't let their kids walk to school. And this is kind of a problem with the survey that we're gonna deal with, which is traffic safety. That's so generic. Of course that's going to be the biggest concern. And we want parents to like really specify what the issue is. So the next one there is the speeding cars. That's why it's so important to get the police department involved, is that we want to decrease these barriers that parents face letting their kids go to school by walking or biking. And if speeding cars is the biggest one, then we want the police department to know that so that they can help reduce that problem around schools. Obviously, a lot of parents don't want to let their kid go alone, and the next slide is going to answer that. Fear of crime is pretty high, so we want to increase police presence. We want to make parents feel safer, and then actually unsafe sidewalks and bikeways is kind of halfway down the list there. It's not super high on the list, but I know from talking with parents that that's something they mention consistently when I speak with parents about letting their children walk or bike. And I know Adam touched on that when he was talking, is that our roadways need to be built for that cyclist that's not fearless. We need to have the roadways that are safe for all parents and children and older and younger people to ride. We asked the parents if the conditions that concerned them were met, would they let their child walk or bike to school? And only 75 people answered this out of the 100. But of those 75, 60 said yes, or they might let their kids walk or bike to school if we address some of those barriers, some of those concerns they had. And 15 said no, that there really wasn't anything that we could do that would make them feel safe enough to let their kids walk or bike to school. Or they lived too far away from the school, which is also, you know, that happens. So, but 29 parents said they would consider letting their children walk or bike if cars drove slower. And another thing to keep in mind is that most of those cars are other parents driving their kids to school. So it's a collective responsibility, and that's what we talk about when we go to the schools, is that parents, they know that they're causing the problem too, and they need to pay attention also. And then 23 parents said they would consider letting their children walk or bike to school if there was less traffic. I'm actually not sure now why I chose those two particular slides, because what I wanted to tell you was that more parents said that they would consider letting their children walk or bike to school with other children. And then also when you added walk or bike to school with other parents, it was a very large portion of that 60 said that they would let their children walk or bike to school if they were with other children or with other parents. So that's why the walking school bus and the bike to school day and those things are really valuable in getting more kids out walking and biking to school. So how can we get there? I just wanted to include this slide because I really like that picture. The work that Adam does a lot of advocacy. He knows a lot about policy, a lot more than I do. I call Adam when I have questions about new policies. I work on programs. We work together to encourage more bicyclists and more walking, and our roadways belong to all of us. They're not just for cars, so we want to encourage that as much as possible. And also address that the public health issue. So we want to make sure that that people have access to this form of physical activity. Not everyone can have a gym membership, but everyone can walk or can potentially ride a bike. And then this is an activity that's happening tomorrow morning, so I thought I'd put it up there. This is the bike boulevard that Adam showed a picture of earlier. It's Morrow Street, and if you ride your bike to work to downtown tomorrow on Morrow Street, we're providing breakfast, coffee, and tasty treats, and I think someone from the Council of Government's going to be making pancakes out there in the morning. So just as an example of what I try to do is just to the more bicyclists we have out there, the more we can influence policy. So we work reciprocally to get more of what we need to make our roads safer for bicyclists. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was very interesting. Are there any questions from commissioners for either Adam or Jessica? Commissioner Hetherington.
The art display, what hours is it open?
Well, it's open really on a volunteer basis right now. So whenever one of us can be there, it's open. But it's consistently open on Thursday night and Saturday. And I believe it's going to be open tomorrow evening.
Okay, thank you. I think it was in the paper that it was just open Saturday evening or Thursday evening or something. And
okay.
Yeah.
Well, when we first had the event, it was just going to be open that one night. But it was so popular, and all of us that were involved with it were so excited about it that we wanted to have it open as much as possible. So we kind of created this, like, volunteer time. So somebody will say, oh, I can be there tonight. Like, I was there last Wednesday night. So it's just as much as possible we have it open right now.
Okay, great. Well, I hope a lot of people come by to see. Commissioner Horn and then Dr. Thomas.
I wanted to ask about, are you working on speed bumps around the schools so that the traffic will go much slower and it's safer for walkers and for bicyclists? Is that something on your agenda?
Sure. We're working on all kinds of traffic calming measures. One thing is speed bumps. Another thing we're working on is, one of the things we're working on is a bridge between C.L. Smith School and I think it's Laguna Middle School so that kids don't have to take the sidewalk area on LOVR. There's other things we can do like traffic circles to reduce vehicle speeds on the roads. Taking our roads back and making roads for people, not just automobiles.
I have another question. Are you working on legislation to make adults have to wear helmets? Kids who wear helmets and see their parents not wearing helmets, it gives them the wrong idea. Oh, boy, when I'm 16 or 18 or whatever the age is, I don't have to wear a helmet. But the point of the helmet is to make them safe so that they have less damage done if they fall.
Right.
So is your group working on legislation or trying to push legislation? It took a long time to get it for motorcyclists.
Sure.
So the question is, are you doing it for bicyclists?
We support everybody wearing a helmet. I think there is some controversy within the bike advocacy world, and that's the controversy is that we need to not just make accidents safer, but our roads safer. So if you're wearing
Absolutely.
A helmet going 90 miles an hour, that isn't really...
Absolutely. I agree with that wholeheartedly. Yes.
But certainly, yes.
Thank you.
I want to know whether the guy's chewing tobacco up there or not.
Yeah, I think those are just bugs.
A sign of a happy bicyclist is that he's smiling and has bugs on his
face. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That's good. I didn't think it was spit tobacco, but
no.
Just wanted to make sure.
That's actually the Slow Cog Rideshare. That's our team name is Spinning and Grinning, and one of our staff members came up with that.
My real question, can you talk about a bike rodeo sometimes put on at schools, and how does a school get a bike rodeo at their school?
Well, a little bit. The biggest one I think that happens in this county is the one that the city of SLO puts on with the SLO Police Department, and that one happens in October consistently and is now being held at Hawthorne Elementary School. Although the other things that we do, what I've done is that I have given a number of like bike safety classes, I would say, at the after-school programs, Slow City after-school programs, and during their summer program last year I did that. Also, I've worked with the Cal Poly Wheelmen, and we've done assemblies. Bringing the wheelmen is really fun because the kids love it. They love to see the different kinds of bikes, and they ride around more, and they do, like, tricks and stuff. And that has really made my show go a lot more smoothly, is having the Cal Poly Wheelmen there. So those are kind of the assembly things that we've done lately. And we continue to do those, although at this point we've applied for a grant. Rideshare's applied for a grant through the federal Safe Routes to Schools funding to hire a bike programs coordinator. I mean, not bike program, that's my job. To hire a Safe Routes to Schools coordinator who would just take over all of that work. But when I frequently get requests, and we try to fill them consistently because the last thing we want to do is not give bike education training to kids when schools ask for it. So we definitely make a point of coming out to schools when they contact us. And usually what I'll do is I'll call all the league cycling instructors that live here, and I'll call Cal Poly Wheelman, and we'll pull something together. Something that's happening this Saturday is that I've been asked to come do a bike rodeo at there's a community yard sale that's happening at Los Osos Valley Road and Madonna in that neighborhood down there. And the woman that's organizing that called and asked if we would come out and do a little bike safety, or like a bike rodeo. I like to call them bike skills because I did a bike rodeo last April. And we set up all the cones and we did all these activities with the kids. And after it was over, one of the kids was like, "Well, when is the rodeo going to happen?" And I felt really sad. I was like, "Well, that was the rodeo. It's funny that it's called a bike rodeo. I don't know why it is, but that's what we call it." But we do different things. Like we practice turn signals and the helmet fitting and the stopping quickly and scanning is really hard for kids. It's hard for some adults. That's being able to look behind you to see if there's traffic coming and still go straight, which is not easy for a lot of people and really not easy for kids. But it's one of those skills that we try to help them develop. So we do that, and we do a lot of riding around. And I've found that oftentimes there's a long period of time that just we spend on pumping up the tires or, you know, putting grease on the chain or those little things that, you know, make the bike easier to ride. So that's a big piece of it too. But to answer your question, if schools want to put on bike rodeos or bike assemblies or bike or walk to school days, they can contact me at SLO Regional Rideshare. And my number is 781-1385. And I usually pull from the Bike Coalition and their education classes to put something together.
Yeah, I just have gotten very good feedback about some of the bike rodeos and how much fun they are for kids and how it has gotten kids riding.
Mm-hmm.
And parents feeling a lot better about their kids getting on bikes because they know they're going to be safer.
Yeah,
so,
great.
Thank you.
Sure. Commissioner Garena.
Yes, Adam, you spoke of AB 1358 and AB 437. Can you tell us a little bit more about those bills and what they do and where they are in the process?
Well, I'm not an expert on state issues as much as my friends in the California Bike Coalition are in Sacramento, but I think they're in committee right now, both of them. And I can provide you more details on that if you like. Sure.
Commissioner Warren.
Yes, Adam, you mentioned the first Bike First program where they're available for folks and also the education that went along with that. Where is that available for people? Is it just within the city of San Luis or elsewhere in the county?
We make it available countywide. We'll be bringing it back this summer. It depends on what grants we get. The APCD grant we got has made it possible for us to get 25 bikes this summer. After that, we'll have to apply for another grant and find some more funding. So,
how do we find out about that? Do people apply? Or
that'll be on our. You could certainly find it on our website. That's www.slowbikelane.org. You certainly get in contact with me. Our phone number is 547-2055.
Are there any other questions? Anything from the public?
Good program, great program.
Thanks, Eric. Okay, that is the end of that part of our program, and thank you very much for being here. We really appreciated your presentation. It was most informative. All right, now we'll move on to the next item, which is the Healthcare Access Program update from Mary Miller, our patient advocate, and she's going to talk about the medically fragile homeless. Welcome, Mary, and thank you for being here.
Good evening. I'm Mary Miller. I'm the patient advocate for the County of San Luis Obispo, and I just have a real quick quarterly update under the EOC Healthcare Access Ombudsman Program that the county funds out of the general fund. And when it comes to area of residence, we're still getting more calls from North County. And when it comes to race, we're still assisting more Caucasian individuals than other minority groups. And people still question that about me. And the reason for that is because I actually have allies in throughout the county out of other programs like the SAFE programs, Healthy Starts, Head Starts, and so on to assist, you know, the other minority groups. And when it comes to age range, we're still seeing high numbers with the highest individuals that are either uninsurable or having difficulty getting insured health care coverage, and that is still age 22 to 61. I'm sorry, age 22 to 64. And for various reasons, we're seeing now, even though Dr. Thomas asked me to really, really try to promote getting individuals to sign up for some kind of health coverage, and we're seeing that a lot of employers are needing to look at their benefits packages and reduce benefits. So unfortunately, that's really impacting, instead of the numbers declining, we're actually seeing an increase. So that's kind of, and we're still, out of this program, we're still getting more females calling instead of males. But, you know, little by little, males seem to be getting comfortable about calling in regards to healthcare issues or assistance. And then reason for assistance is still pretty much primary care, but here in this county, we're having a lot of difficulty with specialty care and trying to access providers to provide those services here in this county has been a great challenge. So I'm still looking for hopefully an orthopedic that's willing to do either at no cost or very low cost, provide services. And we're talking across the spectrum for adults. I had an 82-year-old little senior citizen lady that I had to refer out to UCLA Torrance for a hip replacement. So those things do come up. And you're probably wondering, well, she's 82. She was undocumented. So that has also come up in our county. And in regards to we're still seeing out of this program a lot of either uninsured, you know, self-pay still is our highest, and Medi-Cal is our second highest for coverage. So we still have a lot of individuals that aren't covered. But we're trying to get creative, and I try to use guides like this that are both, you know, in English and in Spanish, bilingual guides, to educate our residents here in our county about health care programs that are available, and we're trying to get creative too with individuals that are like self-employed to at least try to carry catastrophic care and possibly go self-pay at the community health centers or maybe some other, you know, doctor or health group or something in the community. We have several of those. We have a lot of holistic type combination with general Western medicine and Eastern medicine throughout our county. So, any questions in regards to the EOC Healthcare Access Ombudsman Program?
Commissioner Hetherington.
Thanks for being here, Mary. I know in San Diego we had a program where we went around and we got the names of like all the specialists and asked them to donate one case a year to those less fortunate, and it became fairly successful. Now, this was back in the early 80s, I guess. But I remember, because I was on part of the Go Ask team, and, you know, once they realized that, you know, Dr. So-and-so was going to take on one case a year, it kind of was like a domino effect. So I just offer that out, that that might be a solution, because usually they might give up just, you know,
yeah,
one.
Yeah, that's a fabulous idea. You know, I was I'm kind of seeking more because we do have several undocumented individuals in our county that need healthcare services that run under specialty. And so I was trying to more like international, you know, kind of try to secure those type of groups. But I appreciate, I think that's a fabulous idea. So I'll pursue that. Thank you.
Any other questions on the report? Okay. Thank you for doing that, Mary. Now we'll look forward to your medically fragile homeless.
You're welcome. The next report for this program, the semi-annual report, will be out in July 2007, so just in a couple of months here. I mean, it's, the year is just going so fast. In regards to the medically respite services for homeless people, that came about last October. Dr. Thomas asked me if I can kind of look into inappropriate use of the ERs. So we have four acute hospitals here in our county, and if we look at that, we know that that's very costly and a very costly way to access health care, especially if it's just for primary or maybe urgent type of care. So so we actually came out with realizing that we have a few homeless individuals that needed pretty extensive care. But once they were discharged, we found out that they didn't have anywhere to go. So in the long run, that actually produces a higher cost because they end up returning back to the hospital. And so I kind of started the process and realized that this was going to be a humongous project for me to undertake by myself out of this program. And I thought, you know, I leaned on Lee Gulliver, the homeless services coordinator out of the Department of Social Services, and she's fabulous. So she really helped me put this together. And then I kind of like, she's really been the head person in regards to this. So we have a huge team from providers. We have individuals out of each hospital, out of the ER departments, out of the social services departments, case management departments. Out of Haslow, we have representation. Out of Duncan People's Self-Help Housing, we have representation. Community health centers. So it's a huge group that's undertaking this, trying to address at least having some kind of respite. But then we're realizing that we have to provide not only a acute respite, but also respite for extremely medically fragile or end of life hospice, you know, housing. So we're looking at all those kind of different programs, and we've been taking field trips to other counties to see what they're doing, because we found out that everywhere in the United States, everyone's experiencing the same issues that we have here in our county in regards to the medically fragile homeless. So I got to visit one respite care called La Posada, and I just put just the front of their brochure. It's in Bakersfield, and it was a beautiful little Victorian house. But again, they only were able to provide six beds. You had to be mobile, and they provided two beds for maternity. And again, you had to be mobile. So, you know, that poses the other issue. Well, what do you do with individuals that don't have the mobility and, you know, but yet can't go back to the hospital or aren't allowed to be at the hospital? They are considered, you know, able to be at least in some kind of discharge. So we're looking at this respite type of housing would be for pretty much at max about a 3-week stay. And then, you know, link the individual or family to case management services like EOC Homeless Services to address or help address their homelessness. So it's a big project, but there's a lot of people involved, and I couldn't do it without them. So Lee Gulliver and the group would like to come next month and address this further, you know, and so on and so on. So.
Oh, that's great, because we were looking forward. I wasn't sure then whether she was coming back with a further report on this, and because we had planned it for June. So, yes, is that the answer? We'll be hearing more?
Yeah, that's what we're hoping that, okay. You know, group. Jody was going to come tonight, but I think she must have had an emergency that she wasn't able to come.
Okay. So, well, thank you very much. This is a subject that's, I think, of interest to all of us. And I guess there are some questions from commissioners. Commissioner Shamousas?
Hi, Mary.
Hello? Hit it again. Oh, I just need to be.
Thank you. I need to be closer. I'm closer now.
Are you working at all with Judith Bernstein with the Adult Services Policy Commission that was discussed at the May meeting, the feasibility study on the long-term case management? Is that dovetailing at all with what you're doing?
Yes.
Okay.
It will, because, again, you have, even out of my program, you have individuals that are just have chronic conditions, and they're accessing a lot of the nonprofit services. And again, tying up the lines and kind of taking a lot of time from providers where that time could be used a little bit more efficiently.
Are you gathering any data in terms of numbers of people that are using the systems inappropriately that could feed into that long-term?
That actually came up, and I know that you were there, you know, the last time we met at that meeting. And I think that's something that this county, we're all looking at, you know, making sure we're gathering that type of data and looking at that for long term. Yeah.
Any other questions for Mary? Any questions or statements by the public? Okay. Thank you very much, Mary. We appreciate your being here, and we're going to look forward to hearing. Oh, I had a question. This agenda that you included in our packet, and I know I got a copy of it at the last meeting too, is that this group that you're talking about, is this what they're meeting monthly to address this? Is that what that's about?
Yeah, and Lee has been assigning us to different groups and different tasks, you know, that way we can come together as a group and report back and look at glitches and, you know, things like that. So
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you again. Oh, excuse me, Commissioner Warren.
After looking at this, I was curious because I've been following the emails and getting some of the minutes.
Uh-huh. I've been following the minutes of your meetings. Is this the same group here that's also working to look at detox and some of the sober living and being able to provide that to the homeless individuals?
Yeah. Again, there's so many individuals involved in, you know, but it is because if we look at it in an efficient way and in a long-term way, to have integrated or wraparound services and to have them all in one area localized, in the long run, it's going to be very effective for all of us. And my goal is, you know, I always tell the group, I'm regionalized. I'm always saying, you know, North County, Mid County, and South County, because I came from Santa Barbara County. And I'm hoping that eventually in this county, we'll have the services integrated in that sense, you know, one-stop shops, where, again, you know, you'll be more efficient with your workforce and your providers and your services. So hopefully I think we're going to be able to accomplish that eventually, you know, and that, so.
Thank you very much for being here, Mary.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, next on the agenda is the Childhood Obesity Task Force. I, as you know, I was out of town and was not able to attend the Board of Supervisors, but I believe Dr. Thomas is going to give us an update.
I can give you an update. It depends on how much of an update you want. I do have the PowerPoint that Joel Dieringer presented to the board that I could quickly go over if you want to see it. Some of it's repeat on what was presented last month. So in a nutshell, I'll start with a nutshell report, and then if you have further questions, we can put up the PowerPoint. You basically got the draft version last month, and there really were no changes to it. So what you have is the final report. We're working on getting it put on the website for the county public health department. I'm not sure whether it's up yet or not. Not up yet. But among others, the task force agreed to continue meeting most of the members and evolve into an advisory oversight group and some action committees. So that was one recommendation. Secondly was putting together a communications plan, media advocacy, getting information out. and they were supportive of that. Third, the most specific was hiring a health education specialist, after some discussion, they agreed to do that at that time as opposed to making the recommendation for next fiscal year. So they voted to approve that to fund the position in the new fiscal year. We need to go to the Health Commission. We need to go to the Health Commission. We need to go to the Civil Service Commission. There's a lot of commissions. We are revising the job specification a little bit to broaden the job specification so that it's not dealing with one patient, one health educator. It's a more some health educators are one-on-one. Obviously, our expectation of this position is a much more global one to do community outreach and to bring other organizations together to ride the wave of interest here. And we must have gotten some attention about it because I was somewhat happy to say we got shredded. Read the shredder in the New Times. I can report back to the shredder that one of the purported activities of the health education was imagined to be somebody walking down the street swatting Twinkies and ding-dongs out of the hands of children. That's not something that we anticipate doing. They just won't get in the lunchbox in the first place. Since we brought you a draft last month and you had time to look at it, I think that discussion was potentially bring it forward for your official approval.
Are there any questions? We did have a very good presentation last month. I think we're all really excited. I did actually see an email that said they'd approve the position, and I thought that was the most exciting thing I'd heard in years. But it's wonderful that we are going to move forward with this, that this task force is actually having an effect. Is there any discussion? Anybody on the commission want to say something? Commissioner Warren?
Dr. Thomas, I had a question on goal 2, which is to increase access to opportunities for healthful eating for children and families, and under the recommended actions for community and faith-based organizational environments. Number 5 is to eliminate marketing of unhealthy foods and beverages at community and faith-based organizations and activities. And one of the concerns I have, having been on the committee for the Beginnings program, is are we looking at all these fundraisers that are including lots of wine tasting that are, I've seen some recently that have said, well, and then we have these activities for the children. What kind of message are we giving our children with this, and is this considered unhealthy at any point?
I guess the overall statement is trying to move towards healthier snacks and rewards for schools and faith-based organizations, and I can say that I am pushing to try and move coffee and donuts to coffee and fresh fruit or fresh fruit and water, that's a gradual process. I have been willing to compromise at the current moment of, well, maybe we could cut the donuts in half and have orange slices because the comment was, well, the only way I get my kid to church is if I offer him a donut, that's sad. But and I also was told, look, you're bucking hundreds of years of tradition here. And so we're not going to change eating habits overnight. So it is going to be an education and alternatives. We're not food police or food Nazis. We're wanting to offer healthy alternatives and make that. I would envision that hopefully 5 years from now, rather than it would just be automatic. Nobody would be taking the donuts or the half a donut that was available, and so it wouldn't make any sense to continue having donuts. People would just be eating healthier. In terms of does it make sense to serve the send the kids off to eat donuts and drink Coca-Cola while the parents have a wine tasting, obviously that's problematic too.
Are there any other questions or comments? Go ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you. In this whole report, that the thing that we used to have years ago was mandated physical activity in schools. And I don't see that anywhere in this report to get schools to go back to mandating that that is a requirement to, of the school and have those physical activities. Is that impossible or what?
No. Let's see. It is in here. There are 165 recommendations, and the physical activity in schools, I'm looking here, increasing opportunities for healthy eating.
But I don't see the word mandating any place.
What it talks about is enforcing the law that says that kids have to have physical education, ensuring that they receive the the legally mandated amount of physical education. And also there's something here about increasing the University of California requirement for entering UC, because the schools tend to follow that. In terms of their requirement, one of the issues in San Luis Obispo is that they have trimesters at San Luis Obispo High School, and so in one of your, I guess if you have to take physical education in your sophomore year, you only need to take it 2 out of 3 trimesters because you meet the requirement that way. So you could go from the winter trimester of your freshman year until the winter trimester of your sophomore year with no physical education, which is, we think, not a really good thing.
Thank you.
Are there any questions from the public or comments?
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I think this is a wonderful report, and I was very glad to hear it presented at the supervisors and hear their reaction to it, and I largely support your adoption. I made a few comments at the supervisors. Relative to physical education, it's not just a matter of whether, but how. When I was a kid, physical education was a horrible arena of bullying of fat kids. And I will make no bones about it. That's what it was. The fat kids were trying to keep up with the other kids, out of breath, physically suffering, and bullying of them was encouraged. If that's what physical education is like today, I'm against it 100%. I think there are a lot of very sensitive people now teaching physical education who have had a better education about education and their part in an educational curriculum. But I think rather than just saying, let's mandate physical education, let's look at how it is done, because the kind of abuse that I witnessed as a thin person feeling sorry for my fat classmates, if anything like that is going on today, it needs to be stopped. The other comment I wanted to make, however, first of all, I think the idea of quality food for people of all ages at all sorts of events is important, but it can't just be low-calorie fresh fruits. Kids burn a lot of energy. Some adults actually benefit from having calories. And there are baked goods that are much more healthful than donuts that help fill you up. And so I think there's a spectrum. We need to find a reasonable place in it. Finally, I wanted to put one more idea on the table as a future agenda item in terms of follow-up. One of the recommendations in here is to encourage local jurisdictions to ban drive-through restaurants because they are very much associated with obesity-generating eating patterns. The Board of Supervisors currently has in its legislative platform a plank that the state should mandate that all local jurisdictions permit. In other words, they actually have in their legislative platform a plank encouraging the legislature to prevent any local jurisdiction from making that decision or imposing such a ban, presumably in the interests of disabled people. But, of course, it's more a convenience issue than an access issue if the disabled people have gotten into the car or the van or what they're using. It's a hassle to get out and back in again, but it's not strictly an access issue. However, the proliferation of drive-in businesses makes life much more difficult for people on bicycles, on foot, and as I say, it does promote obesity-forming eating habits. So I would like your commission to have a presentation of both sides of that issue, debate it, and bring a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. We came within one vote. I've been raising this year after year. This year, for the first time, we came within one vote of having that plank stricken from their platform. And if they, having adopted this, it's inconsistent with their obesity plan that they've bought into. So perhaps with the voice of the Health Commission influencing their decision, we can maybe swing at least one more vote and restore at least local control over that issue. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Commissioner O'Dell.
Yes, Eric, on goal three, it says fund training of K through 12 teachers to integrate social, cultural, emotional, and mental health aspects of physical activity and health education into the existing curriculum.
I'm for it.
Yeah, right, that's what it's there.
Okay. I think that we're done with that agenda item, and we can move forward.
It's, now, I believe it's an action item, ma'am, yeah. Madam Chair.
Oh, well, okay. I wasn't sure exactly what action we really needed to take on this because it's gone to the board. And did we do something last month? I don't think we actually voted on anything.
There was a
support,
general consensus of supporting concept because you had not seen the final version.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. I guess we need a general consensus to support the final version then, if that's appropriate, although the purpose was to try and influence the Board of Supervisors to take action. So what is the Board's pleasure, or what is the Commission's pleasure? Do you, Commissioner O'Dell?
I think we should go ahead and act on it and endorse what the board did and support it.
Okay.
And we have the whole report last month and then this month. So I would so move that we support this and support what the Board of Supervisors did.
Okay. There's a motion on the floor, second, which has been seconded. Is there discussion on the motion? All right, then I think I best repeat the motion so we can get it in the record. There's a motion to support the community action plan developed by the Childhood Obesity Prevention Task Force of 2007, that we fully support the plan as put forth. And does that do it, Commissioner O'Dell? With that? Is everybody satisfied with that? All right. Then we could just have a show of hands, I think. All those in favor of the motion? All those opposed or abstentions? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you very much. All right. The next item is the public health, community health status report from Dr. Thomas. I think that last month we all got this rather large document. Yeah.
I guess I do have a question, Madam Chair, and that is you have been sitting now for an hour and 20 minutes. That's 80 minutes, and do you either want to take a break or do you want to stand for a couple minutes while we bring this up?
We'll take a 5-minute break. Thank you very much, Dr. Thomas. All right, we're back in session. All right, we're back in session, commissioners. And Dr. Thomas will now give us the community health status report overview. Thank you for doing this.
You're welcome. The community health status report, Jean, I believe this is on the website. Maybe not. It will be on the website very soon, just like the childhood obesity prevention report. And it is this April 2007. We passed it out to you last month, and we only printed 50 copies of it, so that was not the first printing. It was the version 0.5 as opposed to version 1.0. There is a new section which you have a copy of on body mass index. Essentially, we didn't want to call the chapter obesity, so it's now called body mass index. It replaces section 21 in your existing one. So the other thing is that the Action for Healthy Communities report is also out. And I will pass this around to the commissioners. It covers similar territory, but has a wider, it's not just on health. And the entire report is at www.unitedwayslow.org. So if you would like a copy, I'm sure you could ask for one. It has a CD in it, but the whole report is on the United Way website. So I will pass this around. This is just hot off the press last week. Okay, and I'd just like to cover some initial high points of this. Obviously, we could spend hours, but Table 2.2 talks about Medi-Cal fee-for-service, and I will remind you that we're going into a Medi-Cal managed care situation next year in 2008. The state has notified the Santa Barbara Regional Health Authority that they're not going to be ready January 1st for this. So this is the first time this has been publicly announced. We just got an email today. That it's going to be postponed at this point till March 1st. So a 3-month postponement in that. But if you look at the most recent data here on Medi-Cal population, the average monthly users in San Luis Obispo County, and I apologize that it's fiscal year 03-04, 28,000 average monthly users. I'd like to show... have you noticed that users per 100 eligible is 56 with a cost per user of $529? If you look at California as a state, the users per 100 eligible was 69.4 and the cost per user was $615. And that information is information to us. I'm not exactly sure what that means compared to some areas in the state. People are having more difficulty getting access, or whether Los Angeles and San Francisco being some of the leaders in the number of users, there's a higher acuity, they're sicker or not. I'm just not sure, and we will be working with Santa Barbara Regional Health Authority as well as with CHC. And CHC, Community Health Centers of Central Coast, sees about 85% of the primary care Medi-Cal, so we're going to be working with them on getting access data. Timely prenatal care. This is from, you may remember that other years we've come forward with the county health status profiles. And so the 2006 county health status profiles provide data on 2002 through 2004. The 2007 county health status profiles are not out yet due to the merging, or due to the creation of the separate Department of Public Health from Department of Health Services at the state. They're working on the administrative issues of trying to separate two large departments and didn't get this out this year. But it does show that our timely prenatal care is staying pretty stable, just up a little bit from the 90s, we're just below 80% to 82.7%. That is actually lower right now than the state as a whole. I'm interested to see, this is, as I said, 2002 to 2004, and interested to see if this data will, this curve will start churning with Community Health Centers of Central Coast taking over the much of the prenatal care for the Medi-Cal population and increasing access throughout the county. We do very well in regards to breastfeeding frequencies at not only postpartum as they leave the hospital, and that's been the county health status profiles has followed that, but also Cal Poly did a study of the breastfeeding rates at 6 months of age, you see that it does drop from around 90% to about 68%, I believe, in San Luis Obispo, but it's still significantly higher than it is in both in California and the United States. It's almost double the United States average. So it's an area where we should be proud that we are doing well. And these are some of the areas that are recommended to increase the breastfeeding rates. And I think that we've done many of these, and some of the breastfeeding warm line and the breastfeeding services support in the county has been exemplary. My recollection is that the General Hospital had an international breastfeeding award, and we have really created that culture over the years, and hopefully we are maintaining that in the county. The First Five Commission is supporting the continued breastfeeding support program through community health centers as well as CHC providing that. French Hospital provides that. Sierra Vista provides it. So it is in out in the community. This is one of the happier slides. This shows the teen birth rates. We're more concerned. We're concerned about teen birth rates in the 18-year-olds, but the 15 to 17-year-olds, the younger girls particularly, you can see that in San Luis Obispo, our rates have been lower than the state and continue on a downward, down from around 20, over 25 to around 10 in 2004. I think this rate has actually been, it's actually come up just a teeny bit above 10. But it's significantly below the state level, and we'll continue to work on that. Chlamydia as a sexually transmitted infection is on the rise. It recently had press, recently there was press about the increased rate in Monterey County and Santa Barbara County, and we're not alone. We're surrounded by areas where the chlamydia rate is going up, and I suppose that might have something to do with it. Part of the issue here is increased screening, which is a good thing. The ability of urine screening as opposed to having to do urethral swabs or cervical swabs makes it easier just to get people in and do the screening without having to do an uncomfortable, what some people consider an uncomfortable exam. And we're continuing to do chlamydia education to try and follow up of our chlamydia cases to try and keep this. Education and contact follow-up are the two most important things. If you can get people to be monogamous, or if they're not, to use barrier methods, and if they don't get screened, or even if they do to get screened, we can reduce this. It's always helpful to see what are the leading causes of death, both in male and female. The heart diseases and stroke, you look at, they account for more than a third, or right around a third. Cancer, around 25%. Chronic lower respiratory diseases, COPD, and then those are then below 5%. You get into unintentional injury deaths, Alzheimer's, pneumonia, et cetera. Suicide is a is responsible for overall, if you look at all residents, 1.3%. But I do have some slides on suicide in San Luis Obispo County coming up. New chapter obesity, I gave that to you. So this is a somewhat busy slide, but if you look at the combination of the light blue, which is the overweight, and the darker blue, which is obese, you can see that you add 40% and 17%, and you get 57%, and that is actually added very essentially identical statistics to the state of California overall. We actually have a few more obese, a few more overweight, and a few less obese. Maybe that's a good sign. It either means that the curve is turning slower in San Luis Obispo County in terms of the gain, or it could mean we're making more progress. And this is the a slide on the number of teens in San Luis Obispo County who are, by definition, overweight. And you can see the overweight percentage is around, according to this, about 10%. Our other figures more recent are higher than that. Diabetes prevalence in San Luis Obispo County. You're looking at CHIS data, the 2005, CHIS stands for Community Health Interview Survey, I think we're still waiting for the 2005 data to be available on that one topic, but you can see that on terms of diabetes, we are lower on diabetes incidence, particularly the age-adjusted rate. So that's another good sign. Asthma prevalence, the pollen in the air is extremely high right now, and we're all suffering from it. I'd ride my bike more frequently if I could keep the pollen out of my face and my nose. But it is mostly seasonal. So, and you can see that San Luis Obispo County, all ages, we are right up there with the state, actually just slightly above it in the CHIS data. Okay, suicide death rate. This is something that, while it is lower than it was in the 10 years ago, there still remains a gap between the rate in San Luis Obispo County and the state of California. And somewhat shocking, if you look at particularly in the males, you see some just amazing increases in the rate of suicide per 100,000 population. Now, need to realize that these are relatively small numbers, and so can vary very significantly. But this is over a 2-year average. It certainly tells us that there's some work we need to do through all the age groups. There's a little bit of an increase there in the teenage years, which is an area of big concern, and then through the mid-adult, and then it just goes up markedly. These are the successful suicide attempts. You'll find statistically males are much more efficient at successfully committing suicide. The actual attempts, females are significantly higher, but they typically statistically the use of trying attempted overdose with medication versus attempted suicide by firearms, you see a big difference there. Yes.
Dr. Thomas, is the California men's colony population in these statistics?
For the suicide, I don't know. I'm sorry, I'll have to get back to you on that. Okay, and that was the end of the overview. Are there any other questions? Hopefully I can answer the next question. Okay, well, I can roll right into Public Health Director's report.
I just had one quick question. You know, at General Hospital, we had the breastfeeding center there. Yes. And the warm line and everything. And that really was a very effective program. Is that part of CHC now? What happened to our, because I think it remained for a while, but I don't think it's there anymore.
Community health centers has a number of breastfeeding consultants and educators. They do some of that through their own resources, and some of those are stationed with the WIC program. So it's a collaborative effort between WIC and CHC to provide those services. Some of the same faces that were there at General are still in the program. But also, there are programs through Sierra Vista and French in Twin Cities.
I have a question, please.
Thank you. Go ahead and ask your question, Mr. Arnold.
Thank you. Dr. Thomas, I saw on the list Alzheimer's disease listed as a cause of death. So I think of Alzheimer's as a form of dementia, and you could be totally demented, lose your mind, but you still live. So I want some clarification on how this is listed as a cause of death.
It's listed by physicians with severe advanced dementia as a cause of death on death certificates. The secondary cause may be aspiration, pneumonia. That's a very common cause, or other extended bed sores sometimes, or there are a lot of other secondary causes, but the underlying disease that led to the problem can be coded as Alzheimer's. So that's where it would come from.
And let's see, there was something about respiratory, the pneumonia you mentioned would come under the respiratory diseases that were listed for?
Pneumonia was listed separately.
Oh, okay, I missed that.
Right, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Okay, so public health director's report. Number one on my list was, yay, we got the health education specialist funded, so we've already talked about that. There's a new face at public health as program supervisor. Children's Medical Services, which is in the Family Health Services Division, we have a new program supervisor, Mary Gallegos, who comes over from Central Valley. And so we're looking forward to that's been a position where one of the program supervisor had enough supervising, and so she went back to being a staff member. So we've had an interim trying to do two or three jobs for a couple of months. So that's welcome. There's a pandemic flu training and exercise for school staff that's been offered through the County Office of Education that is coming up May 29th. And if any commissioners are interested in observing or participating, you're welcome. Contact myself or Jean about that. It is getting to be mid to late May, and so the mosquitoes are coming. And the West Nile virus mosquito abatement program is gearing up to work on mosquito abatement. We did not get state funds this year, so some of the larger mosquito abatement helicopters at Laguna Lake, that will not be, was not funded, and so that will not be happening. It'll be some smaller, what people can do with using the larvicide with their machinery to distribute that, as well as obviously working with community on education, avoiding mosquito bites, using clothes, long sleeves and long pants, and using mosquito repellent, and clearing out standing water in yards, and trying to get mosquito fish. Those are all items to reduce the mosquito population. I'd like to announce another new program manager, Health Systems, County Medical Services Program, Kathleen Carl, who was a health commissioner several years back, has been hired to be the manager of the CMSP program. She's been active in the medically fragile homeless committee that Mary Miller reported on, and so we'll then have two staff members. We have Alice Bodlack, who works with the mentally ill homeless outreach program as a public health nurse, working in our department as a liaison. She's been attending that, but at this point, we'll have good representation on that. And I'm happy to announce Kathleen's hiring. She'll start the day after Labor Day and bring lots of good energy, I think. And that is the end of my report. Any questions?
Commissioner O'Dell?
Yes, there have been a series of confusing articles about action the board took on detox. Could you clarify what has happened exactly? What action did they take?
No, I wasn't there. I saw the confusing article, and I was a bit confused, so I can't explain it.
So we're still confused?
I'm still confused.
Thank you.
But I can get some further clarification and bring it back next month.
If you would, that would, thank you very much.
Detox, we will bring detox information next month.
Mr. Shimosis?
Dr. Thomas, you mentioned getting mosquito fish as part of a mosquito abatement action. Who does that? How does that occur? Is it a plan for the larger waterways in the County, or how?
Actually, they don't want, Fish and Game don't want mosquito fish in the larger waterways but in people's ponds, in their backyards, and areas that are not, don't have tributaries running from one place to another, they're a good alternative to reduce. On our website, www.slowpublichealth.org, if you go to West Nile Virus Mosquito Abatement, you can find information on where to pick up mosquito fish. Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Thomas. Okay, we'll move on to our commission updates. The chair update, I just wanted to report that on the Tobacco Control Coalition, that their 2007 through 2010 tobacco control work plan was submitted on April 19th, and they'll get some feedback from the state sometime this month. They're also continuing to recruit for a second health educator whose emphasis will be on more cessation and parent education. But right now, the activities that they are completing are focusing on advertising for the current work. The current work plan is focusing on advertising and deterrence. And I think, as you know, I believe it was the City Council of Pismo Beach agreed to make Pismo Beach a smokeless beach. And so the coalition had participated in that, and they were very pleased to see that happened. And I also got a copy of this Action for Healthy Communities. I got this in the mail. I thought this was very interesting, and I talked today with Janice Wolf, and they could even present us a program on this if we are interested in having it. So I thought it might be a really good possibility that we could have this as a program in the future. That is all for me. Shall we start at my right with Commissioner Shimousis?
Thank you, Chair Enns. I have a couple of months report on the Adult Services Policy Council meeting. I apologize that you couldn't open the report I sent you, courtesy of my wonderful new Windows Vista program. I just love not. Okay, so I'll start with April and kind of combine the April and May. Okay, the Mental Health Board is presenting to the Board of Supervisors. I noticed in the meeting minutes that Commissioner Hetherington mentioned the loss of our only psychiatrist in the county that accepted Medicare patients, Dr. Nancy Speed. There is a task force that is being put together by the Adult Services Policy Commission to deal with this issue, and it's also my understanding that the Community Health Centers has hired a psychiatrist starting the 2nd of April, and they're also looking to hire another. I hope that's correct. I believe that's what was reported at the Adult Services Policy Commission. So
that's great. I do know they hired Dr. Takata.
Right. Felicia Takata. So, also in my report for April was the community-based class action suit to address the low Medicare reimbursement rates for rural counties. 5 to 7 California counties were participating in that action. Slo County was not a part of that action. However, Supervisor Gibson was at our May meeting and announced that we have since joined that action. So that was great news. I was very happy to hear that. There is the 15th Annual Elder Abuse Conference is this Friday, the 18th, 8:30 to 3:30 at the Paso Robles Culinary Academy. I don't have much more information on that. I apologize. But the Older Americans Month is May, and there is a free seminar. It's called Inside Secrets, Navigating the System of Senior Healthcare. It's at the Embassy Suites Hotel on Madonna Road in San Luis Obispo. You can get more information by calling the Senior Connection. Their phone number is 1-800-510-2020. Again, it's free, no charge. Looks like it's going to be a very informative. I'm sorry. I thought I said. Thank you. May 22nd from 10 o'clock to 11:30. Thank you. And I have a nice little flyer. I don't know if you can televise it or. Okay, onward and upward. Let me see. Manuel Negrete from Central Coast Assistive Technology Center announced that there is a grant available to any individual in San Luis Obispo County, Santa Maria, or Guadalupe with hearing and or vision loss, which will pay for audio equipment such as audio computers, talking blood pressure devices, and medication dispensers, video magnification screens, etc. And the Central Coast Assistive Technology Center is taking referrals for any interested clients. The phone number to call for that is 549-7420 to set up an appointment. And a copy of the flyer can be obtained at the ASPC website. Okay, next. And last but not least, an update on CHC. The CHC Medical Clinic is providing services in San Miguel, and Mi Memorial Hospital is currently in talks to collaborate services with CHC to take the mobile unit from the school out into the community to reach more people. And CHC is also contracted with North Santa Barbara County Health Initiative to provide services to people in Santa Maria, Lompoc, and Guadalupe. Questions? I know that was a lot of information. I'm sorry it was 2 months worth of meetings, but I'll work on my software. I will not use the Windows Vista. Anyway.
Okay. Well, thank you, Commissioner Shmuel, for that, for going to those meetings and giving us actually very comprehensive report. Commissioner Warren?
Yes, I attended the Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board, and it was a very active discussion. They had a guest speaker. It was Preston Allen, who's the Director of Housing Affairs at Cal Poly, because they were talking about the possibility of university recovery dorms, with having a dorm designated for students that are actively trying to be in recovery. And so there was quite a bit of discussion around that, and Mr. Allen had told us that they really feel that with the training of staff and the rules and regulations that they have in place, that they felt that the dorms were already pretty well drug and alcohol free is what their goal was. So he didn't understand why we might, we looked a lot of the pros and cons as to why we would specify a specific dorm for recovery, but there was just lots of discussion around that, and I think there'll probably be a little more in the future. He was also indicating that as they bring all of the new dorms online, which will mostly house freshmen and sophomores who are the underage kids who often are a problem out in the community when they're abusing alcohol, that he felt like that's going to create, will help eliminate a lot of the issues we've had within the community. And they were just planning on a lot of different kinds of activities within the Cal Poly community there, that they'll be having a lot of drug and alcohol-free activities and different kinds of programs and things so that they can stay on campus. So it was a really exciting thing. Our concern was, is they do have a committee that has people from the community and drug and alcohol services and various administrators from Cal Poly, and it's called the SUAC, or Substance Use and Abuse Committee, that's supposed to talk about these issues, and the Drug and Alcohol Advisory Board felt like it should meet more than once a year, that wasn't quite meeting the needs of the community and the relationships between Poly and the community. So all in all, it was an exciting meeting. Thanks.
Are there any questions for Commissioner Warren? All right, Commissioner Horn.
Yes, I went to Children's Services Network meeting, and they had Amy Gilblin talking about the Childhood Obesity Task Force report. That's all there was.
Appears that we have on the is it on the screen? The flyer that Commissioner Shmousis mentioned, Navigating the System of Senior Care, May 22nd. Looks a little blurry on this, but maybe it's clearer on television. 10 o'clock to 11:30 a.m. Looks clear up there, too, doesn't it? Okay. So if anybody wants to make a note of that, thank you very much for putting that. Oh, where is it? It's at the Embassy Suites. Okay. Thank you. All right. Let's see. Moving on. Commissioner Hicks.
This working.
Hello?
Oh. Yes.
I'm sorry. They changed the HIV consortium meeting to 2 weeks ago, and unfortunately I had a family emergency and I did not get to attend, but I have requested Marsha Bollinger to send me the minutes, and hopefully I'll have those for next month.
Thank you. I think that the microphones are really a good source of entertainment to kind of lighten up these meetings a little bit. All right. Let's see. Let's move down to the end to Commissioner Odell and see what he has to say.
Yes, there is a this Thursday, there's a joint meeting of the Mental Health Board and the Alcohol and Drug Advisory Board. And this is the first time this has occurred. I think that it's really through the efforts of Dr. Karen Baylor and what she's doing to bring together both alcohol and drug and mental health as it provides services to the people and to the clients. So this is will be a first, and it'll be something I'm looking forward to. Thank you.
Thank you for your report. Commissioner Grena?
I have nothing to report.
Commissioner Hetherington?
Domestic Violence Task Force meets Wednesday, so I'll have a report next month.
Commissioner Donnelly.
I was not in attendance at the Bioterrorism Task Force meeting last time, but I do have an event to let everybody know about. On Thursday, June 28th, they're going to have a disaster readiness for special populations seminar or training at the Embassy Suites Hotel. And basically what it is, it's a collaborative effort to ensure that individuals, agencies, businesses working with special populations have appropriate emergency plans in place. And so as far as for providers, they are offering CEUs as well. And so as far as who should attend, it's being offered to skilled nursing staff, home health care providers, shelter program staff, human service agencies, also child care providers, and individuals with special needs. So if you want more information about it, contact the phone number is 785-0132. And I did print the flyer that they sent me, but I don't know if this one will show up because it printed funny on my computer, but we could try it.
Okay, we'll try to get it up there. Meanwhile, thank you for your report, and we'll move ahead to the committee reports. Let's see if we can get that flyer up first, because the legislative report might be a little bit lengthy. Okay, there's the flyer. Yeah, pretty small. There. Okay, save the date, Thursday, June 28th, 8:30 to 4:30. CEUs.
And lunch, wow.
And lunch. Dr. Thomas.
I had one update. that I was reminded of. The director of the Integrated Waste Management Authority contacted me and came to visit me and wanted to make sure that we communicated that the regarding medication, that they are not allowed to accept medication at the household hazardous waste collection site. The other recommendations on that, it was sent out in the public health bulletin, and I think he got it that way. So that the other recommendations of packaging it up well, taping it up in paper, possibly mixing it with mixing a bottle of pills that you're trying to get rid of with a little bit of water and some kitty litter, so that it's rather unpalatable to anybody who might find their way into it, are probably still the best suggestions.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, shall we move on to the Legislative Committee report? Commissioner Hetherington or Commissioner Shmousis, are you, do you?
Unfortunately, I was not at the last Legislative Committee. However, I would like to thank Marcia Bollinger profusely for putting together the packet that was in our packet that we got sent, and thank you, Jean, for including that. Basically, it's a 2007 tentative legislative calendar, lets everybody know what's going on when. I thought it was very, very informative and extremely helpful in terms of understanding the process. And also a description of the bills that we are looking at and what we are supporting. The ones that I'm hoping that the copy that I have is the one that you have. The ones that are checkmarked are the ones that we are looking to support. Pam, I would like your help, too, in terms of what happened at the last meeting. Unfortunately, I was called away at the last minute and could not make it to that meeting. But it is a comprehensive listing of the current active bills. Do any of the commissioners have any questions about any of the bills or the legislative process or what we're looking at?
I got a copy of this on my email. Did all the commissioners, or was it just okay? Well, then I don't know if anybody's had a chance to look them over. Commissioner Hetherington, were you going to report on the meeting, or because I wasn't there either, as I was out of town?
I think there were two of us there.
That's my understanding.
And I think we just went over basically what is in front of you right now. I think, too, after the presentation by the bike people, that we might want to add AB 1358 and AB 437 to the list. But I would beg the commissioners to look this over by next month so that we could do a vote that we want to support that. And if you have any other legislation that we can discuss at the next meeting, I think that would be timely.
Would it be helpful to the commissioners if the legislative committee came with our recommendations, or how? I think that would probably be most expeditious, but it's up to the commissioners.
That's how it's been done in the past. And you mentioned, Commissioner Shmousis, that there was check marks on. I don't have anything with check marks.
I'm looking at my very special copy.
Yes.
Sorry.
You have the most special copy. And is that something, because maybe we aren't looking at every single one of these bills. There's a lot of them. How would you like to proceed?
We'll just organize them in terms of what we are recommending in terms of probably the most. There are an awful lot of bills.
Well, we looked at an awful lot, too.
Yes.
Now, are your check marks the ones that we originally recommended? Mm-hmm. You might want to run down that list so everybody can have the same check marks.
Okay. SB 120. Do you want me to?
Ours are organized now according to type of bill.
Yeah,
So SB 1.
Well, why don't I get on the same page that you, because I don't have what you have and you don't have what I have. So let's all get on the same page. I'll put a package together or have Marcia put, I'm still going to have to cross-reference.
Why don't we do this? Why don't, maybe you could email to us all those that are ones that the committee is considering, and then that way the members of the commission also have a chance to kind of do their own looking at that if they want to prior to the meeting. And Commissioner Hetherington, do you have further?
No, I just want to apologize for not being prepared, but I didn't even realize that I should have been giving this report tonight.
No problem. I think what we'll do is we'll just organize this and have it sent out to the commissioners. And if you could please just look at it before the next meeting, and then it might help it move a little more quickly.
Great. Commissioner Warren, did you have something to say?
Yes, I had a question on the second page on SB 655. And it's making possession of tobacco or tobacco products in a local correctional facility an infraction, punishable by a fine of up to $250. My question is this, because when I look over here under the bill, it says inmates prohibited items. Does this apply to the staff also?
Good question. Well, stay tuned for further.
Yeah, that we need to find that out.
if that's one of the ones we're going to... it wasn't actually on our list, but as I recall, on the list of bills that the legislative committee was looking at in more detail.
It seems that might be one that would be have a lot to do in this county, since we have so many correctional facilities and community members that work in them.
All right. Then Commissioner Warren has requested that we look at that, the legislative committee look at that bill as well, and so we will do so. Commissioner O'Dell?
I believe it's a men's colony. It's already in effect. It's absolutely in effect, and they try to sneak them in all the time.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Well, it's... And I knew it was both here, but I didn't understand why this was happening, if they were making it throughout the state. Yeah, I'd just like a little clarification on that.
My understanding is that it is trying to put, it is against the rules, and this is just adding a hammer to the rules in terms of the monetary, right.
Okay, then my question remains the same, is the hammer applied on both sides of the bars.
Yeah, I don't know. I suspect the correctional officers can possess it. They just can't smoke it.
Yeah, that's probably
at least
true.
Not on premises.
Yeah. Stay tuned. Okay. All right. So there is no action at this time from requested by the legislative committee. Now let's move to the Community Education Committee, and the chair of that is Commissioner Hetherington.
We haven't met since we put out the flyer, and thank you, Dr. Thomas, for sharing with us that you had a visit from the IWMA. I actually have a friend of mine that's looking into some of the other legislation in the state of California about disposing of drugs the proper way. You know, I think San Jose is a prime example of maybe where we should be headed, and I think that it'll be on the agenda in the near future. But we haven't met, so I don't have a report.
Okay. Thank you for that non-report. Is there anything from the Budget Committee? Budget Committee. Who's Budget Committee? Commissioner Telcher, right? He's not here. Okay. And he didn't give anybody else anything. All right. Nominating committee, Commissioner Hicks?
Let's see if I do that. Oh, I did do it right. Okay. We're not having the greatest turnout for applications right now. We still are accepting them. We don't have anyone resign, or there isn't any terms up at this time. Gene has sent out four. We have one completed application that was brought to us about 3 or 4 months ago, if I'm right, Jean. We've sent out about 4 that we have not had returned yet. She got a promise from one person that said that they would be sending back the application this week. We want to have at least 3 or 4 before we start interviewing because it's kind of hard to get everyone together that's on the committee, ask them to take off from their jobs. And so that's the only reason we haven't interviewed our one and only alternate at this time. If you are in the audience or our TV audience and you are interested in being a health commissioner as an alternate, that is what we are recruiting for right now, please call Jean at 781-5520 and let her know. We are going to start our interview process hopefully the minute we get 3 to 4 and get them on our alternate list. But we are fortunate that we do have alternates in our system now and that no one's term is up. So I don't want you to think I haven't been doing my job. We just haven't had much response. Any questions? Good.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, everybody, for your reports. Last item on the agenda is future perspective items. We have June. We're going to have the medically fragile homeless presentation. Do we have the water quality? Did we have the water quality?
They haven't come back.
I would definitely like to see that.
Air quality wanted to be put off till later on, right, till like September. But I've forgotten what happened with water quality.
I would definitely suggest that Kurt Batson or somebody from his department come and give an update.
Okay.
Because, I mean, the beach closures in Pismo Beach are getting really onerous.
A whole week
of closed beaches. And, you know, they're waiting on grant funds. And I don't think that the public health should wait on grant funds. I think that there should be something done more proactively rather than waiting for
especially with summer.
Right.
Okay. So would you let them know we would like to see them? Thank you.
Chair Enns, I would also go as far as asking the Regional Water Quality Control Board to appear as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Jean. Thank you, Commissioner Hetherington, for your comments. Are there any other comments about future items for our agendas, Commissioner Hetherington?
Are we due to have a retreat in July, or because we're all old commissioners, we don't need one? seasoned commissioners. I'm sorry.
Seasoned, yes. I think that we will have a retreat in July. That was sort of where we left it, because it's a good opportunity to talk about programs that we and to kind of get ourselves a plan for the upcoming year. It doesn't always fall how we want it, but we've been pretty successful the last couple of years in being able to do that. So yes, that will be the plan. So then the programs after that, although we have a number of things coming up that we'll be hearing about in the fall. Commissioner Warren?
Yes, there's a program that I'd like to have us hear about, and that's Terry Woods has a safety program on stranger danger, and it's a training program that she offers. And I think with what we heard tonight around the number 3 and 4 issues for parents not letting their kids walk to school or to parks and things had to do with them not walking alone and fear of crime. And I think this will help give the parents some real tools. She may not provide it. She won't give the training here, but she can really give an overview of what it offers, and it's an excellent program.
Dr. Thomas, did you care to add to that?
Not on that one. Oh. I had another topic, and that was the you had wanted the Air Pollution Control Department to come talk about air quality, particulate matter in the air, burning, et cetera. And they indicated they could come after July 25th, so that would be, if you wanted them in August,
okay.
That would be a good time.
Okay. And I think we were talking, wanted a little more information about the burning. Was that, yeah. And when do people do most of their burning? It's not in the summer, is it? Okay. Well, it'll be interesting to know when it is and how that affects their report to us after July. All right. Thank you, Commissioner Warren, for that information on the Stranger Danger Program, because that is something that's really an important part of our obesity task force's recommendations. This meeting is adjourned.